This is the Past Lives Podcast, episode 210, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives Podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We will look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. This is the free one-hour version of the episode. The extended episode is an hour and 23 minutes, and to get access to the extra 23 minutes and the other extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives Podcast Patreon campaign. When you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week, and for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday, and you can find it on almost every podcast app. And there is also a new $12.50 Patreon tier, where every week you can get the extended episodes of the Past Lives Podcast and the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes. And there are now 53 extended episodes available in the back catalogue. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you're a patron, you'll get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. And look out for the Past Lives Podcast episodes called Paranormal Stories that are released every Thursday. The links for all this stuff is in the show notes, and you can find the show notes for this and every other episode on my website. There is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And this week I'm talking to Ron Iacovetti about his book, Paranormally Speaking, Knowingly Talking to the Unknown. Ron has investigated some of the most notable haunts on both coasts of the USA, including the Queen Mary, the Oman House, the Shanley Hotel, White Hill Mansion, the Glen Tavern Inn several times each. He is involved in all aspects of investigating, but his specific area of afterlife research is ITC, or Instrumental Transcommunication. He has spent 2 years doing innovative afterlife research experimentation rooted in the European methodologies of ITC, known as Direct Radio Voices. Hi there, Ron. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. I was honored to be asked. This is very cool.
You got a book out, your great book, Paranormally Speaking, Knowingly Talking to the Unknown. I want to ask you the question that you put in chapter one. Why investigate the paranormal?
That's something I put in the beginning, and a lot of people are laughing at the first chapter because it's literally like a paragraph. It really, by all standards, doesn't qualify to be a chapter. And that's why I did it that way. And it basically just says, you know, these are, I'm listing reasons like passion and gadgets and enthusiasm and stuff and the people in the community that are awesome. And then I put, go ahead, write your own ideas, whatever you think, because, and I make a joke that I'm not going to buy the book back from you. So go ahead and write on it if you want to. But the message that hopefully comes through on that is that you need to know, because this is something that takes up time. We spend money on it. Some people, if you're not in it with your significant other, it's time away. If you have kids, it's time away from them sometimes. So you got to know why you're doing it. You got to have some sense of purpose, even if it's just for the curiosity of it, that's fine. But I think knowing why is something that will sustain you and sustain you with some pathway of integrity. You know, I think a lot of times people start for the right reasons and then they're wondering why they're not on the next TV show, and boom, all of a sudden, you know, the bitter posts start coming out. And so I think it transcends just the spark at the beginning. I think it sustains your purpose if you know what it is.
So if you wanted to start investigating this paranormal stuff, but where did that spring out from? Was it when you were real small, you saw a ghost, or is it something that you got into when you got older?
Yes, it's a great question, basically, because I have an odd timeline with it. Fascinated always as a kid. Did not have one of those saw a ghost stories, though I would have loved that. Probably now I would have loved that. At the time, I probably would have filled my diaper threefold, but now it would have been a cool story. Always interested in it. And here, you know, where I grew up, I'm in New Jersey now in the northeast of the United States. I used to live in Los Angeles for 14 years. That's where I started actually investigating, was in L.A. But I think for me, the first brush with it that I could have had came from, I was working a part-time job when I was starting out, and we talked about this before the show for a minute, one of my show business endeavors, and I had a part-time job to support that until it became its own entity for income. And I met a woman who worked at this place, whose husband was not only a performer, but he was also a UFO and paranormal investigator and a parapsychologist named Peter Jordan. Brilliant guy, hilarious, amazing to hear him speak. And so I had one time when we talked, and he told me about cases he worked on, and he was involved, I think, with some of the investigating with Amityville, and he's like, hey, maybe one time if, you know, you could always join and come. And I was like, oh, all right. And I don't know why I asked this question, because I had no knowledge of the paranormal at the time, but I asked something about ghosts or anything being able to come home with or follow you home. And he said, yeah, it doesn't happen a lot, but it can happen. And I was like, check, please. I'm out. Remember, we had this conversation. Never. It's done. And I just wasn't ready for it. And I put that in the book, too, about knowing when it's the right thing to do if you're interested in it, because that was not the right time for me. Then flash forward when I was living in Los Angeles and I went through a very, very amicable divorce. My ex-wife and her husband are still two of my best friends. We both, you know, share a deep love for our son. And then he has a little brother who I love like one of my own too now. So the time we separated and I started dating, I ended up with someone for a little while. And we didn't agree on anything to watch on TV, like 8 million cable channels and nothing that struck a chord for us both until Ghost Adventures. Earlier on, I think one of the earlier seasons. And then we started watching it, and some of the locations they were doing were close to where we lived in Southern California at the time. And then I started, we booked a few public events, got asked to join a team out there that was looking for new members. And that's where it took root. So I've actually started there. I've worked on, blessed to have worked on both coasts in some of the really, really cool places. Like my favorite is the Queen Mary. So that's how I got started. It was a curiosity. It was brought into my life temporarily at the one point when I first met Pete Jordan. I wasn't ready. And then later on in life, when I was living in LA years later, it became something that took root.
And I suppose when you're on an investigation and something happens that you genuinely believe could be supernatural, you must get some great kind of feeling. What was the first time when you encountered something and you thought, holy moly?
That's a great question. I love these questions because they're bringing specific memories. Like, I'm not having to go through files in my head, many of which are dusty probably, to find an answer. I would say that the thing that probably was the most wow, taken aback moment when I started was at David Oman's house, which if people don't know, you can look it up, O-M-A-N, Oman House in Beverly Hills, California on Cielo Drive. It was, if you're familiar with the tragic historic event, the Sharon Tate, Charles Manson murders that happened in Beverly Hills, it was not the same house. That house was torn down in 1994 and subdivided into four lots, I believe. And David and his father built a house on one of them. It is a geomagnetic anomaly, this house. I think it reads somewhere in the 3,000 to 5,000 milligauss negative at the front door and positive by the spiral staircase in the back of the house, or the other way, but it's two complete polar opposite readings. It is the most consistently active location I've been at. Like, if anybody, if you're in this field, that it's the most predictable part is that it's not predictable. You can go somewhere that's known for being active and then nothing. I've had that happen. My girlfriend Lourdes and I had that happen at Eastern State Penitentiary in Pennsylvania. Great place. Well, people have amazing evidence from there. We didn't even get much. It wasn't, that's how it goes. David Oman's house has never disappointed. And so the first whoa moment I had like that was a few of us were asking how to get to the exposed dirt in the hillside part of the house. It's literally a room where you can see the dirt, the landscape under the house, because it's built into the side of the hill. And not being there, we didn't know. It's kind of hard to find. It's on the bottom floor behind the little bar area. So he's telling a few of us how to get down there. And while we're talking to him, this big movie poster with a thick wooden frame and a glass front, so it's got some weight to it. An earthquake, it would slide right down the wall and hit the floor. It came off the wall in slow motion, one hook at a time, like a person was removing it. And then it was about to start falling face forward into the bar, and David caught it real fast. And that was probably the first. I had other things, I guess, when I was younger, even when I have stories in this book, and I have a second book coming out in the coming months where I talk about a couple of stories when I was younger that probably were something of a paranormal effect that I didn't know at the time. But that was probably the most notable first experience, just watching this movie poster and with this frame and glass and just come off the wall in a very dainty and gentle way, like a person was doing. It was bizarre. I could not explain that at all.
And I suppose occasionally when these things happen, that gives you more impetus and more excitement and spurs you on to go do more investigations.
Yeah, you know what the adage, right, what they say with someone who doesn't believe any of this stuff, I'll call them cynics because I think the word skeptic is way overused in the wrong way. They have to be right 100% of the time. We only have to be right once. If one unexplained thing happens, then unexplained things happen. So for me, in that aspect of it, that definitely spurred on a desire to go further and not just experience it more, because I think there's stages of it. I think we have stages of it when it's part of it's the, and this is normal. People get criticized for this, but there's a certain thrill seeker side of it to it when, you know, you want to go somewhere that's not your home and watch something move or fly off the wall or you know, you want to see that stuff because it's got a built-in sensationalism to it. And I guess, and in a lot of cases, if it's somewhere that you're going to leave and visit, it doesn't have the same fear factor as if it was in your home, your sanctuary. But there's a certain part of that that I think drives you. And then you, at some point, I think, evolve. And maybe you sustain some of that, but I think you evolve a little bit to a point where you want to know not just why and how. And there's always probably a little subcategory of who or what. But that's the part that's, you know, the who and what we may never know. It's so difficult to say. I think sometimes, because we specialize in audio evidence, I think sometimes when people get something audible, they get a device that goes demon. They go, ooh, it's a demon. It said it. Demon, it said it. But just because it said the word, if I say astronaut now, it doesn't mean I'm going to space tomorrow. You mean so? You got to use some level of discernment here. But I think that's part of what it was. I think you have the, like you said, the impetus for going forward. But I think it's multi-layered. I think some of it's sensationalism and that experience that you're not supposed to have, or so we're taught. And then the causality, the how and the why of it. Like, how does that happen? You know, things that are supposed to be, and I'm putting air quotes up, laws of physics or laws of nature are being violated. So yeah, I think you transcend the sensationalism part of it and then look for answers, as everybody says, looking for answers.
So when these things happen, is it always excitement? Do you ever get scared? Do you ever get to the point you think, no, I'm leaving now, that's enough for me?
I haven't gotten scared out of a location. I've seen it happen to a lot of people. And some of it isn't because of the nature of what happened is evil or scary. Some of it's because, we always say this, no matter how educated and experienced and full of equipment and technical knowledge that you can be, when something touches you or does something that is that far beyond the norm in the moment, you are not 100% prepared. It's part of the human condition. This is why athletes who know how to do phenomenal things will practice their basic, like, 3-point shot in a basketball court, right? They'll run certain drills and just because they're drilling the rudimentary things to make them reactionary. Fighters will do the same drills and combinations in a certain way so that it becomes ingrained. So when you're in the moment with stress, it becomes a knee-jerk, spontaneity-based reaction, and it's not something you have to sit and think about, and you lose the moment. So, for me, I'd never been scared out of a place, but I did have a run-in one time around 2013 when I lived in Los Angeles, where I had what I guess would be categorized as an attachment. I did have something that either manifested out of a situation or from a location, due to a high stress scenario at the time. It was a high stress scenario that was part of the dating life I was in. This is not, again, like, my ex-wife and all that were fine, but And I think it was born of that. And I had, and it's in the book, great story now, not so much at the time, because it was, I had some kind of an entity, whatever, whether it was manifested through the angst or if it was something that was attracted to and feeding off of it, but I had something. And it's, I understand that for some people that might be something that goes to the review board for their belief system, like, you know, whether or not I believe in ghosts, but I don't know if I believe in that part, because people have those subcategories for their beliefs, right? People, it was a survey years ago, 70% of Americans thought you could, that there is an afterlife. 70%. 70% of those people didn't think you could communicate with it. So there's subcategories within beliefs that people have. So for that, I think it was a little bit different for me.
And you have a phrase in the book of what you say, an attachment problem. Did you have an attachment problem?
That's a yes, spot on. That's exactly what I was speaking to. That situation that was born out of that angst or whatever it was, I can't identify it by name or nature. I don't know what it was, but I was told by two of the shaman that worked with the group I was a part of in California at the time, that it was, there was something attached, and it was negative. It had an attachment at the point of the solar plexus, which for people who are the science and biology buffs, the two areas in your body that exude the most energy outside of you are your mind, your brain, and your solar plexus. Actually, your solar plexus is number one. So that's where the attachment supposedly was. And I had, they said for a month, this thing was latched on, and I didn't know it right away. And so I oddly remember when I mentioned the Omen House and being a geomagnetic anomaly with the readings you get there. So I had gone to that house during that time. And so for some people who believe that that kind of energy may or may not aid in the manifestations, that could have been, for lack of a better term, a B12 shot for whatever's attached and gave it a little juice, a little energy. And it was in the 2 weeks before I rid myself of it that it had a chance to make itself known. And I had all kinds of stuff happen from that in succession to the point that I finally went and see the one shaman. And people could say it's, you know, it's psychological, it's placebo, that, you know, you go do this thing and all of a sudden you feel better. But I don't know, you know, I don't know what she did to identify certain things, like, you know, you take a pill, I can see a placebo effect, but what she did ritual-wise, it doesn't have any context or meaning to me, so I don't know how strong a placebo that could even have psychologically, but whatever it was, it worked. I did feel better a couple hours later, and then gradually almost felt like she said, like it would melt off. So that was an attachment issue, and I do talk about it in the book, and I go into detail about what those little experiences where that happened one after another, because it's really odd. It's really odd, and it's easy, even if your inner critic can go, well, you know, you can second guess things, and you know, when we reanalyze things sometimes too many times, we start backpedaling on what we know and what we believe, overanalyzing, overthinking it. But it does talk about, I do go into detail in the book about it. Because people have had far worse situations with hauntings and stuff than this, but something like this is definitely sobering. You know, it gave me an awareness of a possibility that was always presented to me as remote, and I still think it is, for the most part, remote, but not impossible.
Because when I talked to Richard Estep a while ago, he said he felt at one point something followed him home.
Mm-hmm.
And he, after that, he said he started doing some kind of something to protect himself before an investigation. Do you have anything you do?
So, yeah, kind of. So I'm going to comment first because I love taking these opportunities. Richard Estep is brilliant. If you don't know who he is and you're listening to this, look him up. He's got more books than most public libraries that he's written. One of them's called The Right Life. It talks about writing a book, different aspects of it. Building the habit to write, publishing, self-publishing. It's got a whole bunch of stuff like that mentioned in it. And it's just fantastic. So he's in, we just spent time with him at the Rochester Parafest in Rochester, New York, 2 weeks ago. Really good guy. Really, really. You can't be in a field in a community, have any opinion on it, and not be willing to do something to contribute and improve it. And he, I think, contributes a lot and improves it a lot. So I just wanted to comment on him on that, because I think it's important that we make the assets within our field known. So the spotlight's expandable. When it's on you, you can always bring other people into it. That's my modus operandi on that. But yeah, some people have ritual things that they will do for protection. I started wearing a crystal that was had an anointing oil that another shaman I knew from a different group had given me at the time. But what really helped, I think, me, and it's funny because when you have any kind of a pendant or anything you wear or do, the consensus, which makes sense because intent is measurable, right? The consensus is that your belief and intent behind it is what really empowers it. Like if you're wearing a Jewish star or a crucifix or something, but you're an atheist, and how much is that protecting? It's like an unloaded gun. So one of the things that helped me was that one of the shaman who sadly passed away within the last year or so from COVID out in California, who was part of the group I started in, she noticed, I guess, that I had found a way to stay and be emotionally grounded more. I think that's where, if this is an energy-based kind of a thing, I think that's where some of the vulnerability comes in a lot of times. I don't think it's necessarily the only way, but at least in my experience, the one time I had something that was an attached thing, it was a vulnerability thing. It was an emotional state thing. So, and then she would tell me every so often, I see your stuff on Facebook, I see your pictures, you appear to be so much more grounded and protected. And then she would say that you have these certain, and I had different psychic mediums independently tell me about these entities, these glowing light spirit guide kind of entities that were around and protect me. And, can I quantify and qualify? No, I can't. But I don't doubt it. So I think for me, it was that. It was a lot of the finding the inner strength, the constitution, I guess, the inner constitution, having a little bit more of an iron will with stuff that I developed, ironically, in the same way, I guess, that muscle development happens, right? You tear it down, you break it down, which is what happens if you have an attachment problems a lot of time, and then you build it back up stronger. And I think that's what happened with me. I think something capitalized on a moment and a vulnerability, and it broke me down pretty good. But it didn't have a long time to do it, and then I grew from that, and I've never had anything happen like that since.
Hello listeners, this is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyze what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. You use technology and EVPs and direct voice radio and, is it sweeping ghost boxes? But you talk about one of your heroes in the book. Was it Marcello Bacci? Could you tell us about him to start with?
Yes. And so That is the area of specificity I fell into and had a passion for, which is ITC, instrumental transcommunication, or as it was coined, I think, originally Dr. Ernst Sinkowski, who was a physicist out of Germany, a TCI, transcommunication instrumental. I started out the same way most people did, at least in the States here, with the Spirit Box SB7 and then the SB11 that had two Spirit Boxes in it. And then you start meeting some of the people who are Ghost Box builders. So Bocce, I put as a, I use a sports analogy here, GOAT, greatest of all time. Because for ITC evidence, I don't think, and I know that the Harf Fischbachs in Luxembourg, my dear friend, Dr. Anibal Cardoso, there are people whose evidence and level of communication is staggering. But Marcello Bocce was, to me, just almost unparalleled with what he was able to do through what was not high tech, especially for these times, with a vacuum tube radio. So what I've done for the last 3 years or so in ITC has been direct radio voice. Now I have, and I'm glad you brought it up the way you did, because it's a distinction that I'm fighting two things with direct radio voice. I'm fighting DVR, which is a digital video recorder, which is when TiVos and those things came out so you could record your own TV shows when you're at home. I keep trying to dispel people say DVR instead of DRV. That's the first thing I'm fighting against, but I'm working on it. The second thing, and especially, I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but in the United States, because of the ghost hunting movement through television and media, was built so strongly upon Frank Sumption and the Frank's Box and the Ghost Box and the Spirit Box, that people not only don't know Marcello Bocce or direct radio voice, and there are some who do, but for the most part, the masses, the populace in ghost hunting, the teams that are out there don't. And so they don't know anything with ITC and radio communication that isn't a sweeping ghost box. I have several sweeping ghost boxes. I have amazing boxes built by Stephen Katie Hulte, Jay Prather, Austin Maynard. They're phenomenal boxes. They absolutely work. But the reason Bocce was named is because what I've been doing for the last 3 years, my girlfriend and I have been sitting, Lourdes Gonzalez and I, we did 2.5 years with at least one sitting every week, if not more, especially when the whole quarantine and shutdown of the world happened, of doing a direct radio voice. Scheduled time, same night, literally just sitting in front of the empty barren white noise channel. So I've been doing it around 3 or so years now, and that's become my brand, I guess. That's become my main area of focus. Like I said, I love the ghost boxes. I just got a new one from a gentleman named Austin Maynard in Ohio, and they're fantastic. But there's a brevity to the messages I find that doesn't exist in the same level with direct radio voice. And there's a purity of it that if people who know, ITC and using direct radio voice was born out of EVP research when they were using the white noise from radios and devices to provide audio support for EVP and EVP capture. So when it evolved into modulated voices coming out of the radio, that's when they were off to the races with it. And so when I saw what Marcello Bocce had gotten, I was blown away that I was in the paranormal field, ghost hunting, whatever you want to call it, for how many years I was in at that time and didn't know about it. I was embarrassed. I'm like, I like ITC. I'm in this field. And how did I not know about this guy and these achievements? And then I started finding all these people from, especially a lot of the European researchers, Hans Otto Koenig. People don't know who he is here. And they're all head over heels about the paranormal and ghost hunting and all this stuff. And I'm like, the best stuff has ever been captured. So much of it is from European researchers, and they don't know. So direct radio voice with the empty, barren, white noise. And for us, I've used long wave. I've done it with shortwave also. I know Marcello Bocce used to work in a shortwave frequency, as did Friedrich Jurgensen before him. And that's what I started doing 3 years ago. It's an empty, white noise, barren frequency. And Lourdes and I, like two idiots, would sit in front of a radio going for an hour and a half. And then we would, like two bigger idiots, listen to for another 2 to 3 hours. Because, you know, when you review, you have to stop and go back, right? But that's what I've been doing. It's been direct radio voice. It's the empty channel. And it has a purity like EVP out of nothing. it has none of the low-hanging fruit. And this is something I found when I talked to Mark Macy in the States, when I talked to Dr. Annabelle Cardoso on the phone a few times, that none of the esteemed researchers in Europe will ever say that ghost boxes don't work, because they think everybody knows they can and do. But when you're doing consortiums and conferences and you're debating things and you're trying to raise funding for research, I think this is more of a European mindset, I think, because I don't find it here as much, that any of the low-hanging fruit for the cynic, you know, self-proclaimed skeptic types that you can remove from the equation, they want removed. And I think there's a certain mindset in the purist side of it, where direct radio comes from, that says if you're looking for vocals as the anomaly, then putting vocals into the process is devaluing some of what might come out that you're saying is an anomaly. Right? You're putting something in and trying to filter it out, so to speak. So, but when you're using a barren, no radio emission channel, and then it's just, and then you ask a question, and then it says something in response, you have timing, which, and relevance, which to me governs all ITC responses, and then you have the fact that this vocal came out of an empty station. There's no human vocals, no fragmented speech that's being cycled through or swept. And that, I think, levels it up as far as the vetting it for genuineness.
You said in the book, Mr. Bacci had all three vacuum tubes removed from his radio, the power unplugged. He was asked to stand in a Faraday cage, and there was still communication coming through.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. I feel like if anybody argues the authenticity of spirit communication through radio and they don't mention him, that's like going to court and leaving the smoking gun at home on your couch. Like he was put to the test. There was an Italian group called Il Laboratorio. Was it Mario Festa and then Paolo Pressi? There was a few members who were scientists, biologists, scientists, audio engineer, and they tested him. Beyond belief, they made him work. He worked with the radio open. They had him in an area where all RF signal was completely shielded and there was none coming into the room. He still got vocals. I don't know if it was Mario Festa, Festa, who they presented a challenge. They said, we're going to take out a vacuum tube. If you still get voices, we're going to take out two. If you still get them, we're going to take out the third one. That's all of them. And for people who may not know, this before transistors, that's how they worked. If you still get voices when all three are taken out, then he goes, I'll eat the tube. And they did it. One, two, three. And they could not stop the anomalous voices coming through his vacuum tube radio. And then Bacci looked at him. He goes, no, don't eat tube. It's glass. But it still worked. And the only thing they seemed to be able to take out of the equation and stop the vocals was him. And I think that speaks to something that you'll hear Rupert Sheldrake talk about a lot, which is morphic resonance and the collective consciousness concepts. And I think that factors in the operator and the device more than people who get too tech-minded, I think that the technology is facilitating more of it than they probably are themselves.
So you're saying it could be the operator, whether they know it or not, has some kind of mediumship ability that's interacting with it?
I think so, and I hesitate to use mediumship ability because that was something that came up a lot in a lot of the discussions that followed that kind of stuff, especially with Bacci's work, where people would say, well, do you need to have mediumistic capabilities to do that? But a lot of really esteemed mediums, I know some that I know here, will say that everybody has some level of mediumistic capabilities, right? We have certain physical characteristics, like with the pineal gland and having calcite and magnetite. Magnetite creates a magnetic field, so that could be tantamount to a cell phone chip that's communicating with cell towers and it's part of the same, you know, airborne network. So it's possible that, and through consciousness, that is the case. But if you take into account that we all have biologically the same stuff going on, and we all pretty much have to have, if you believe that there's a soul or a consciousness, we all have to have that, right? Then it stands to reason that we're all capable on some level of doing it. Maybe it's like singing, where some people have an aptitude to mimic and to close their vocal cords at the right times and do sounds that other people don't have. So I think you know, based on how we are, that we are, you know, we run on DC current. We are creatures that are conductors. I think absolutely that the operator is part of the equation, and that intent is measurable. I think that that shows part of it too. And that's, I think, what the direct radio voice method that we did based on Dr. Cardoso's work was having a regular sitting and doing it weekly as a routine. I think that shows commitment and intent. And I do think that's something that is detectable. I think that is something that is measurable. So yeah, I, to some extent, maybe there's a mediumistic capability, and maybe with him, it could be stronger. But I don't think that the tech is solely responsible for doing it, or everybody would be able to replicate his results with what he had.
I saw a really good Marcello Bacci documentary on YouTube. It was quite old and grainy. It's in Italian, but it's got the subtitles.
Yep.
Part of that, the voices that are coming through seem so clear.
Yep.
There were also some apports. Have you ever had anything like that happen?
I haven't had the apports happen, but I'm looking to see if that might not be a possibility at some point. So we started doing something called the Digital Seance Initiative, which is basically the fusion of a seance sitting and the focus of that morphic resonance in a group together, the human circuit, and a direct radio voice sitting, which when Bacci did those, had a similar kind of human circuit collective consciousness thing happening, because everybody was in the room kind of united with the same thought, with the same hopes and all that. And I think that counts for something. So this Digital Seance Initiative, we did it once at the Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum in New York State. It was really successful. Is a concept that's putting together both direct radio voice and a formal seance sitting. The possibility of apports, I'm interested in. I would love to see that happen. I don't know of anybody else who did ITCs or direct radio that had what he had. He would literally have like rose petals fall around him. When he would do the sittings in Grosseto, he would have the parents who came, mostly were parents who had lost children at a young age. They would have apports that would pop up under their chair that were specific to what their kid was into, whether it was surfing and it would be seashells. And it's really, for the cynical minded, how do you sneak up on somebody sitting in a folding chair that's not covered and put a shell under their chair without them knowing it? And so there really is some level of mystery to that. His voices were unparalleled in their clarity and in directness. And even if you watch the there's a movie on the documentary on Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O, called Calling Earth, where you see some of the sittings where he had Robin Foy was with him, who's also a really nice guy. I talked to him a couple times. Dr. Anibal Cardoso, David Fontana, brilliant scientist, brilliant author. And he had, I think, Paolo Pressi was in the room also. There's a few of them. And he had real-time dialogue going through the vacuum tube radio. And he told them that they were talking to him in Italian. And he mentioned that he had friends that came from far away who were English or spoke English. And the voices changed to English and started naming people in the room. It named Dr. Cardoso. It spoke to David Fontana directly. I've never seen anything like that out of a ghost box. And if I found one that did, I would buy it. I don't know that the methodology lends itself to that, but yeah, the possibility of having apports happen, I would love to see that happen on a theoretical side. And I don't know, but a part of me thinks that this might be, speaking to where particles of light, photons, have wave function. And when a photon encounters or interacts with something, the wave function collapses and then it becomes particle. And I'm wondering if that both has something to do with the audio coming in. When Bacci was tested in a room that was tantamount to a Faraday cage, right? No RF signal was coming in. They would have detected it and he still got voices. If something was through something along the lines of quantum tunneling or, you know, using the wave function of light to enter the environment, it would not be detectable as a radio frequency. And then if it from there had any kind of fusion with either the device or the carrier wave that the device is trying to receive, they thought with Bocce in some instances, the carrier wave that the radio was receiving was being forged in the environment because nothing from outside was coming in. I think that may also speak to the possibility of apports as well. You know, when light leaves the sun and travels to the earth, no time is lost. It doesn't lose any time. So this could, I think, in some way possibly explain how objects could materialize in real time out of nowhere and pop into existence. Do I know? I don't know. But I'm hoping I have a chance to look into that further by having it happen. That would be pretty cool.
So you constructed, is it a portal using cigar box guitar amp and pedals and stuff? How does that all come together? How does that work?
Those are fascinating. There was a movement, I call it the Portal Revolution. There was an ITC gentleman who's got a huge following on YouTube who started, I'll name him because the people who know him are very divided. They either love and worship him or hate and mock him. Neither of which I do. I've interacted with him a couple of times. His name is Stephen Hoff. He was cordial with me. I have no complaints. And I don't know, there's people who claim to have come up with this ahead of him, that he just made it popular. But the concept that was born out of at least his videos is using a guitar amp with pedals, like reverb, echo, noise gate, and to manipulate the sound. My son's stepfather, Gerard Mackey, who's a brilliant engineer, he works in television here in the United States, he built mine. And I told him what I was trying to do. I gave him the specs for what I was looking for. And then he put it together for me. From an ITC and spirit communication perspective, when people go, so that's an experimental technology, I go, no, it is not. What the amp does is put sound out. That's what amps do. And the guitar pedals manipulate the sound coming through them. That's what they do. There's a whole Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that stands as a testament to that. The use of it in the paranormal is to try to make what's coming out of a sweeping ghost box is where it started. To make what's coming through either an app or a sweeping ghost box more discernible, more intelligible in the moment. With the brass ring, the goal for anybody who does ITC to be real-time communication. They're looking for real-time dialogue. That's what ITC was started for. That was a delineation that Professor Ernst Senkowski came up with. The general consensus on that in the United States with ITC is that it's a third-party instrument that's not influenced by the operator, like a neutral device. But Senkowski's distinction was also that unlike EVP, where it's record and review, the idea was two-way dialogue in the moment. So that's what they were for. They were trying to make the portal boxes were made to have the sound and the voices that came out of it more discernible in the moment. Because most people who do ITC, or especially ITC, I guess, because EVP generally, unless it's a disembodied voice or what's called direct voice, you don't hear it in the moment, but the recorder gets it. But with ITC, you know, because you have modulated sound that a level our ears can detect, you can hear it in the moment. But I think most people who do ITC would agree that you find more vocal anomalies and evidence when you review. Like I've heard one word in the moment, you hear me on the recording respond to it. And then when I play it back, there was a whole sentence built around that or two, and I didn't hear any of it. So that's what those portal boxes are for. It's trying to, with a little echo, a little reverb, a little bit of the edge of the noise taken off with the noise gate to make what's coming out of the box easier to understand. And then now some of the ghost box builders, I have two here. Why one? It's an IDC device from Jay Prather. It's called a Direct Link. And it's got a little mixing board. It's got echo and reverb. It's a computer-sized speaker. And it has echo and reverb built right in it. So you can have that effect all in one little handheld device. And actually, the cool thing about the Direct Link is it uses what we were talking about before with the energy and the morphic resonance of the operator. It has no external antenna, but it's got the little jack for it. And when you put your finger on that, it uses your energy. The same way if you touched any radio antenna, it would intensify the pull. It would clear it up maybe. Same thing. So that actually was a cool concept to use the human energy as part of the antenna. And then this other big speaker that I got from Austin Maynard, this XR1 Ghost Box, it has echo and reverb built into it. It's got the speed of the sweep, and then he has also what's called a pulsar circuit, which is basically maxing out the sweep speed and then minimizing it in pulses, like in oscillations, like, you know, full speed, minimum, full, minimum, full, minimum. So it's varying the sweep speed with that. The people who do these things are brilliant. The Ghost Box builders and that whole movement is brilliant. Frank Sumption, who made the first Frank's Box and made the popularized the sweeping Ghost Box, brilliant. I just, for me, since I'm not a builder, I stumbled across what was the most astounding evidence in ITC in direct, real-time, lengthy communication I'd ever seen. And it brings us back to Marcello Bacci. And I read Dr. Annabella Cordosa's books, and I was like, I need to do this. And I need to see if I am capable of getting what Marcello got. And that's what I'm on a quest to do. And God willing, I live long enough to pull it off.
And you talk about there are times where voices come through, and some critics may say it's just accidentally, randomly tuning into some radio station where somebody said something, and right. It's no real communication. But you talk about how the voice that comes to you from that device is relevant to what you're talking about.
Yeah. I love these questions because it's these are things that are, for me, there are hot button issues. Yeah, that's the thing. It's very easy. Well, let me rephrase that. It should not be very easy. If you're going to have a stance on something, you should at least be able to some way explain or substantiate your position on it. And it's very easy, low-hanging fruit for someone who's cynical to say that it's radio bleed-through and that's what you're pulling in is stray radio. The problem with that, and this is, I'm not the first person to say this, I may phrase it my own way, but the problem with that is that radio stations and DJs don't answer you. And a lot of these recordings, if the box is sweeping, it's the same voice over several sweeps. That shouldn't happen. A lot of these voices are speaking at speeds and at decibel levels that the human vocal tract is physically incapable of replicating. That part gets lost in the whole stray radio thing. And also for me, and this is huge, and I've gotten other people in the paranormal to start saying that. My colleague from our, we have a Monday night show on the UNX, UN-X network, media network called Entity Voices Paranormal Evidence. And one of my colleagues I got doing direct radio voice now, Tony Rathman, started quoting this too, timing and relevance. Let's say radio bleed through can happen. And I'm sure you get, now this is again, this is why I love direct radio voice, because you're not using vocals that are sweeping through, trying to get allophones and phonemes and those little fragments of sound. You're not doing that with direct radio voice. So this part of the discussion we're having now with DRV is off the table. It's another reason I love it. But on the Ghost Box side of it, when they say that it's stray radio, that's the part of it that to me is what governs what you get, is timing and relevance. If I say, tell me what I'm holding in my hand and I have my glasses, and then I'm not talking about when it's like, and you go, well, that sounded like, you know, the someone on a really bad PA system in a subway. No, I'm talking about when it's discernible and you hear glasses. The odds of that coming through on sweeps, on whatever sweep speed, from radio bleed through, at the exact moment that I ask it and that it's timed and relevant to what I just said, is beyond astronomical. I always tell people, if you think that's what happens and you can do that, you need to find out when that radio station is giving away cash and prizes, because your luck is phenomenal. That is statistically off the charts with the possibility of that being radio bleed through when something is directly communicating or it's a response to what you said. And it's really hard, you know, if it names somebody in the room, especially if this person has a unique name, and then it says it again with clarity. I'm not talking about when you're struggling to hear, you know, but that, I think timing and relevance are huge in getting around that stray radio concept. Not to mention, like I said, some of the physical characteristics of it. And not to mention like personal information and other things that come through that, you know, that wouldn't be known by a DJ that's relevant to the person too.
Because there's something in the book you say about the Glen Tavern Inn. It was Chad Lindbergh, and he introduced himself, and then a voice came out the thing.
Yeah, that's it's so cool that you brought that up. I really appreciate that you got the book and that you went through it. I really do. So I'll tell you the coolest thing about that and why I'm happy that you brought that up. You can't see me now, but I'm actually smiling about that. Is that I hadn't seen Chad Lindbergh since that happened. And when in December, at the end of this past year, Ortiz and I went to Las Vegas to the Para-Unity conference. And Chad had a booth. And I got to walk up for the first time in like over 10 years and tell Chad the Chad story, which is the one you're referring to from the book. It was the late Debbie Constantino, who was an EVP master. Chad and another guy, Scott, I was friends with. And then like 30-something people. There were all of us at on the third floor of the Glen Tavern Inn. And I was completely new for the most part. I was still cutting my teeth in the paranormal. And I started taking an interest in spirit box stuff, but I didn't really know anything. And so everybody goes around. They go, we're going to do the spirit box session, 30-something people. Just we're going to shine you the flashlight. I'm going to say your name and say hi, and then we'll do that around again, and we'll ask questions. So all 30 people. And then it finished up with the Scott. He goes, hey, I'm Scott. And then Debbie Constantino, I'm Debbie. And then the last one, it was Chad. And he goes, and hi, I'm Chad. And it was not even 20 seconds, I think. 20, 30 seconds, if that. Probably like 15. And clear as I'm talking, with a deep voice, it goes, I know Chad. And I was like, what just happened? What is he using? And how do I get one? And I was hooked, because that was real time. There is no way that this device that everybody complains about how noisy and annoying it is, going over and over again. And I'm not hearing, you're listening to WPL. I'm not listening to any DJs. I'm not hearing any music coming through. There's no Justin Bieber, Gloria Gaynor, whatever you're into. None of that stuff's coming through. It's just shh. And then it goes, I know Chad. Right after he introduced himself as Chad. Now, if somebody's going to tell me that that's stray radio bleeding through, I don't even know where to begin with how unstable they must be mentally. That's crazy. The timing of that is uncanny. I can't imagine that would be anything else other than a direct response. And that's the Chad story. And I got to tell him that he was an unintentional influence in me taking a huge interest in diving into ITC, because that moment was profound for me. You know, we go into this stuff with the possibilities and the capabilities of, ooh, we're going to talk to ghosts and spirits and who knows what we're going to see. And everything's on that exciting possibility level. It's very, very tertiary until something deep, something profound. And that, for me, was huge. Because this guy with this little tiny radio going shh for the whole 30 people introduction spoke in direct response to somebody's name who just said it. And I was blown away.
So how does that system work? You say it's going shh. Is it kind of randomly cycling through different frequencies on FM or something?
Yeah, so depending on who does them, and this is actually a good distinction for anybody who's listening. If it's the SB7 or the SB11 that you've seen on probably TV shows or on the web, that's a spirit box. If it's built by somebody who's a builder, an independent builder like Austin Maynard, Stephen Cady Holte, Jay Prather, KD or Katie Stafford, they're ghost boxes. If you call a ghost box builder's product a spirit box, some of them might take offense to that, because the spirit box is really identified with the two from TV, which is the SB7 and 11. But the concept is randomized fragments of human vocals. So if you have the randomization, you can't say that it's coming through on a specific station. And it was born originally out of, if I'm not mistaken, a software, which is fascinating, called EVP Maker. It's made by a guy named Stefan Bion, who's, from what I'm told, no longer involved in the paranormal. And then from that concept, Frank Sumption made the first Frank's Box. And then I think 100 and something after that, many of which Steve Holte owns. And it was cycling through the frequencies, either FM or AM. And initially, with the ghost boxes and the Frank's boxes and all that, it was just a linear sweep. So it would go from the lower, like 88 point whatever FM through 105 point whatever FM, and it would just keep repeating and going around. Then some of them made it where you can go backwards, I think the spirit boxes had that. You can go, you can sweep in the other direction. And then some people who got really innovative, like the Holtes, made it where you could do a random sweep where the sweeping would literally jump around the band. So it would go from the 80s to 101, to 92, to 104, to 70, whatever. It would jump around the band. And most of them did AM or FM to give you the option of sweeping through either band. I think Frank Sumption and the Frank's boxes were primarily AM. I don't know if I think he did have FM on some. I don't know enough about every device he built because they were all in some way unique. But that the concept is that you're giving the spirit and their energy, and if it's consciousness and a thought form or whatever it is, or how they're coming through, that they can manipulate those fragments of sound that are being swept through as a radio scans to form words, since they don't have a larynx and they don't have the ability to create what's called a mechanical sound wave, which is what happens when we speak. So that's the concept, is availing them of the fragmented sounds that are randomized, because when you're sweeping through channels, their broadcast is never the same second to second. And so when you're sweeping through them, whether it's reversed, and then other innovations too, the Holtes have, Stephen Katie Holte have boxes that do reverse speech, tantamount to the old days when people would play records backwards looking for satanic messages. They can reverse all the words that are coming out of the box, 50%, 100%, however you want to skew it. So when something comes through in forward speech and everything coming out of the box by the settings is reversed, that's anomalous because it shouldn't be doing that. But that's the basic concept, is that it's scanning through to get randomized sound fragments to be manipulated or used to form audible words.
Is there a good website online you'd recommend where people can click on sound and hear these voices?
It really depends on what they're looking for. I know that Austin Maynard out of Ohio is taking over, and it's going to be a whole ITC Voices website. I don't know how far along they are with putting it out there. It was originally run by a brilliant ITC guy named Tim Woolworth, who's still involved, but I think Austin took the reins with, you know, getting this stuff out there more and uniting the community of ITC people, which is, I think, important. That, you know, even if we have different philosophies and approaches and mentalities, and, you know, I own ghost boxes, I work with ghost box people all the time. I turned a few of them on to the direct radio voice phenomena and what it does. And it really depends if you can, I mean, if they want to learn, I really think for learning this stuff, a lot of it is good to find in literature more than in videos. Like Dr. Annabel Cardoso's books, as far as like, if anybody's interested in direct radio voice, that's what started me out. I wouldn't have a book, I don't think, if it wasn't for her. Which in the back of this, you probably saw that she wrote the About the Author, which that was a huge honor for me. The fact that she and then also Mark Macy contributed. And then the final chapter of the book has, chapter 23, it's advice I have from elite operators and builders of ghost boxes, so that if anybody wants to do ITC, this gives them a little bit of perspective and also introduces them to some of the best in class, in my opinion, Keith Clark, Chris Nuara, and so they can look these people up, and these people will have websites, and they may have their own, hopefully own books or literature at some point as well. But I would say, I mean, if there's something more specific as far as the voices and what to hear or do, I might be able to give you a more specific answer as far as websites go. I know that Tom and Lisa Butler, who are not really involved anymore, took over Association Transcommunication, I think it's ATA, that was originally, I think, started by Sarah Estep in the United States with her EVP work, and then they had taken it over. That site's got a lot of resources. Mark Macy's website, I'm trying to remember the name of the site, the address too, but if you look it up, you could probably probably find it too. Macy Afterlife, I think? Yeah, MacyAfterlife.com. Tons of really good information on MacyAfterlife.com. So if you're looking for, you know, the whole spirit communication side of it and how to's and all that, that's a great place to go also. And then if anybody's interested in seeing evidence that that myself and my girlfriend, Lourdes Gonzalez, have captured with some Ghost Box stuff. We've gotten some really good stuff with some of the Ghost Boxes, but some of the direct radio voice stuff. Our website is gonyacparanormal.com, G-O-N-Y-A-C, paranormal. Gonyac Paranormal on YouTube is where a lot of the videos are, if they wanted to see that. The Gonyac, by the way, if it sounds odd to anybody, it sounds odd to me too. It's her name, Gonzalez, and mine, Yakovetti. Put together, we went with Gonyac because Yak Gon sounded like a pest control company, which is not what we do. So we went with Gonyac instead.
We've been talking about your book, Paranormally Speaking, Knowingly Talking to the Unknown. And that's on Amazon, isn't it? It's on Kindle and paperback. And can people get it other places?
I believe it's supposed to make its way into brick and mortar, you know, bookstores. I'm not sure at what point it is with that yet, but definitely it's on Amazon for both Kindle and for the paperback. I think it's reasonably priced, and I try to, and I really, really appreciate you reading through it and giving me the opportunity to talk about it and exposing more people to it. I really do appreciate it. My goal is not self-aggrandizing. It's sharing stuff that I've learned that I thought was important since I started. This book has a little bit of my journey into the paranormal and then about stuff that I'm into, like direct radio voice and ITC. The next book will be a little bit more methodology and philosophy heavy than this. But this was just about sharing, you know, my journey, and some of which is, like I said, the last chapter, people who do what I do, who I think are brilliant and whose names I think should be synonymous with this era. If you're going to know mine, I feel like you should know theirs.
And could you just repeat your web address for everyone?
Yes, sir. I sure can. It is gonyacparanormal.com. It's G-O-N-Y-A-C paranormal.com.
Fantastic. Well, it's been great talking to you. Thanks for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you so much. It really has been fun and an honor, and I appreciate it. And I urge everybody who listens to continue supporting your show. Brilliant questions and really a great job. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And that was an interview with Ron Yakovetti about his book, Paranormally Speaking, Knowingly Talking to the Unknown. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And this is the free 1 hour version of the episode. The extended episode is 1 hour and 23 minutes. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you will have access to an extended episode every week and the back catalogue of extended episodes. Also, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday, and you can find it on almost every podcast app. My Instagram is the Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word, and on Twitter I am at Simon G. Bown. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. If you enjoy this podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.